Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be joined once again by Jessica Mesman-Griffith and Jonathan Ryan, co-founders of the Sick Pilgrim blog on Pathios.com. This second part of our conversation will focus on the topics of spiritual friendship and why acknowledging the darkness in the world and in our lives is the first step toward finding the light. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and today I'm bringing you the conclusion of my interview with Jessica Mesman-Griffith and Jonathan Ryan, who write for and run the Catholic blog Sick Pilgrim on Pathios.com. Jessica and Jonathan were on our last show discussing the blog's mission, reaching out to people on the journey of faith who are struggling with doubt or personal life challenges. They've built a thriving online community that is moving people toward a deeper experience of their Catholic faith. Jessica and Jonathan are also putting together a conference at Notre Dame called Trying to Say God, Reenchanting the Catholic Literary Imagination. We're going to talk about all those topics today and more, so here now is the rest of my conversation with Jessica Mesman-Griffith and Jonathan Ryan. Why that title, Trying to Say God? What does that mean to the two of you?
I think for me, it's you know, we come to know God sometimes either through the negative, like say Thomas Aquinas, or we come to know God through you know, the person of Christ in the Eucharist, but we're always still kind of missing the mark of his character. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, it's this limited perspective of like sometimes, you know, we're trying to miss God, but then other times we don't really want to say God's name at all because we're so angry at it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's this sort of catch-all term to describe these different states of our faith and our being, depending on what minute mm-hmm. of the day you ask.
True.
You know, so,
and there's also this impression that, you know, it's passé or even offensive to practice a traditional faith in our time, especially among artists, that they may feel uncomfortable talking about their own personal spirituality or religion, but they will be groping for some other way to articulate it, another way to say God. And we want to invite those people to the table too, these people who are searching for spiritual truth and maybe do feel uncomfortable with a traditional faith, but are still headed on the same path that we are still on the same pilgrim journey and still reaching out and trying to say God.
Well, do you think art, in a way, whether it's literature or film or television or any kind of storytelling, does that, you think, have a unique ability to draw people into that idea that there are visible and invisible aspects to the universe, as we say in the Nicene Creed, and to nurture that divine connection inside all of us?
Jonathan, run with it.
I just wrote a devotional for Our Daily Bread, which is a Protestant devotional company, centered on exactly that idea of we live in one reality with two different worlds, the seen and the unseen. And I think, you know, the sacramental idea in the Catholic Church and is something that Protestants are really starting to pick up in the last few years. And I think mm-hmm. the idea of creating these seen realities in our art, whether it's literature or film or whatever, it's always an indication of an unseen reality. And it's not too often we think in categories of like, well, here's the real world, the concrete world, and then here's the unseen world, which is not really real. It's kind of in our mind where, you know, the creed says mm-hmm. otherwise and the Catholic faith says otherwise. You know, there's the concrete real world and there's the concrete unseen world. And the sacramental is in between those two things, one leading to the other and the other leading to the other. So mm-hmm. this doorway, which I think art can certainly be, and certainly in our imagination, and I think
it's why we love the paranormal writers, especially. And I want to encourage Jonathan to talk about Arthur Machen because he's kind of our personal patron, and he's a great example of how those kinds of books can reveal the unseen in a way that kind of, you know, kickstarts your heart. To paraphrase Motley Crue.
Mm-hmm. No, okay.
Jeff mentioned Arthur Machen, and he's, you know, he was a turn of the century weird fiction writer. And, you know, it's a shame because H.P. Lovecraft gets a lot of praise that I think Arthur Machen actually deserves. And he was sort of a mystical high church mm-hmm. Anglican. And he wrote these stories of making people come in context with that reality. But I think the best example of that is Arthur, but then there's Charles Williams, one of the Inglings who, you know, T.S. Eliot wrote about him that, you know, if he's ever going to go into a haunted house, he'd want Charles Williams with him because he believes in both realities in a concrete, real way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Charles wrote these weird fiction, paranormal stories that were designed to do exactly that. Like, you know, what we see is just as concrete as the unseen, and what the unseen is just as concrete as the real. And that, you know, because we're spirit and body together, we affect both worlds. It's not, we've accepted enlightenment thinking that, especially among Christians, we've accepted a naturalistic view of the world, and that this kind of literature that Jess and I have been talking about shatters that and ignores that and says, that's not a Catholic Christian point of view. This is what a Catholic Christian point of view looks like.
Yeah.
And we've seen a real hunger for that among Protestants. As John was saying, I write for Protestant publications. We attended Protestant conferences, and we see more and more this interest in enchantment and the use of that word, which is being thrown around a lot in Christian circles right now, that we live in a disenchanted secular world and that we've lost the enchantment of a world guided by Christianity and a lived-in Christianity. And ways to get that back, you know, we're struggling, except not in the Catholic Church, because we still have it. We never lost it.
And there's some Catholics who want to get rid of it.
We're in danger of losing it because we feel we've become secularized and Protestantized over the years. But the Catholic faith in all its authenticity and truth has not lost that enchanted worldview. And I think that's what's really appealing to the artists and the writers who are looking at our blog, who may not yet be Catholic or who have fallen away from the faith. They see that it is the repository of that mystery, and they're very drawn to it.
Wow, that's great. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Jessica Mesman Griffith and Jonathan Ryan. They run the blog Sick Pilgrim at Pathos.com. They've got the Trying to Say God conference coming up at Notre Dame, June 22nd to 24th. Before we talk about other topics, let me just ask about where can people get more information about the conference? Is there a website?
There is. There's a site on the Notre Dame website. If they type in Trying to Say God, Notre Dame, it'll come in up in Google. The website's still being played with because registration won't open until January. And then if they type in Sick Pilgrim, Trying to Say God, there's a post about the entire conference.
Okay.
They can find out information that way.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. Our blog address is pathos.com/blog/sickpilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
And the conference is through the Institute for Scholarship in the Liberal Arts at Notre Dame. So if you visit their webpage, it's featured prominently there, and you can get all the details on our speakers and the dates.
Right, right. Now, Jessica, let me ask you this, because one of our most popular Christopher News Notes was called Building Spiritual Friendships, and in it, it quotes from your Christopher Award-winning book with Amy Andrews called Love and Salt. And, you know, I was actually kind of surprised at how many requests we still get, because it's like 2 or 3 years since it was published, and we still get a lot of requests for it. So since you've done a lot of talks about spiritual friendship, why would you say this continues to be such a popular topic? Is there a hunger for spiritual friendship, just like you've been talking about hunger in other areas of faith?
Absolutely. And I think it's become, it hasn't gone unnoticed for me that it's become a theme of my work and my career, seeking out community and companionship on the spiritual path. It's essential. It's essential to Christian life. And I think that we've become so shunted off into our little corners and our little boxes, and we seek community online and often don't find it in meaningful ways. And so for Sick Pilgrim to have evolved into this place where people are making those kinds of friendships, we're watching people around the country come together, scheduling meetups, going to mass together, going mm-hmm. to dinner together. I feel like, you know, all of this work kind of grew out of Love and Salt, where that experience of writing that book and having that friendship was such an epiphany for me, that God comes to us and tends us through the hands of others, and we need those hands. we need to seek out those people and nurture those friendships so that we can be that for other people and they can be that for us, because that's been my most authentic experience of God in the world.
Yeah. And would you join in, Jonathan? I mean, most of the requests, I believe, have come from women, but every once in a while I get one from a man. And I think for us guys, maybe it's a little tougher to admit we're interested in spiritual friendship because that requires vulnerability, which isn't always our strong suit. What do you think about role of spiritual friendship for men?
It's interesting because I think you're right on one level, like initially trying to get past male pride, male, like I can do it on my own. And I can speak from my own personal experience of, you know, Jess and I often describe what we do as we're kind of in a band together. And, you know, what we did separately in our two separate careers was pretty good. You know, we both had some success and, you know, got noticed, but together it's gone to a different level. And it's because of our friendship together that it's made that, I think. And then you're seeing sort of the ramifications of that, in Sick Pilgrim, but it's also kind of gotten around my own guardedness. You know, in my own life, I've been wounded. I've been hurt. And so my inclination is to keep those walls up, to keep the sin of pride as a buffer between, you know, my friends and people who are around me. And I think Sick Pilgrim has broken down those walls for me, but I've also seen it in the group. We have tons of guys in the group, like more than I've ever seen in a group like this, because you're right.
Yeah.
Normally, at this kind of group, it's the majority are women, but we're pretty even almost.
Okay.
I don't have exact numbers, but we're remarkably even, and I'm astonished actually by that for all the reasons you just said.
Mm-hmm.
But
You're right. It is astonishing. I hadn't actually thought about it until just now, but even our core group is two men and two women, and I think modeling that kind of friendship between that sort of holy chaste friendship between men and women also doesn't happen very often.
Exactly.
Where none of us are married, none of us are dating, you know, it's really just a friendship on a mutual path. And then but in the group we see men leading nightly prayer, we see men and women talking to each other about issues. We often see the men reaching out to each other, but it has been surprising.
Right.
And I think it's because it comes, again, back to the initial core friendship with Jess and I. And like she said, we're modeling this to people. You know, this chaste spiritual friendship that's been a beautiful thing in both of our lives. And people are seeing it. And so that, you know, they're seeing, you know, and I'm a dude, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm a Midwest lumberjack dude. I love sports as much as I love Jane Austen. So it's like, you know, guys come in and see like, oh, here's a dude being a dude. I can be a dude here and it's okay. You know,
yeah.
John, another one of our core members, he's, you know, he's a dude as well. So he's like from Boston. He's got this great Boston accent. Mm-hmm. He's kind of got this like way about him. And so it's just like, I think guys are seeing that and they're like, oh, okay, I can still be a dude and come in here and be artistic and be all of these things. And I think, you know, it's funny you asked that question, because I don't think Jess and I have ever thought about that, but I think it's definitely a powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's also a tendency to just, we're telling the truth. All of us, there's no hiding in this group. Everybody feels comfortable and safe to share their honest thoughts about God. And I think there is just a universal appeal to sharing that struggle, that it's not dividing us along gender lines. You know, we're sort of like breaking through these stereotypes that we think are truths because they've been presented to us by the media, by Catholic publishing, by the books that we choose to publish, by the pink covers we put on ladies' books, you know, that they're not for men. And in this group, you're seeing that that's just not true. We have so much more in common at heart, and how we're, you know, how we struggle with spirituality and how we just struggle with life. That, I think we're not even noticing anymore those gender lines.
Yeah, and I've told you the first time I interviewed you about Love and Salt, you know, I was very intrigued by the book. I found it very, you know, spiritually enriching too. And even though I think you said it was more marketed towards women, but I think that book in particular can also, you know, cross gender lines and find interest everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'll be back in a minute with more of my conversation with Jessica Mesman Griffith and Jonathan Ryan. But first, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
Though making friends on social media is popular nowadays, real-world relationships are vital to your spiritual well-being. You need to establish friendships that go beyond superficial interests, ones that create bonds to touch your soul. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Building Spiritual Friendships. It shares vital insights about finding companions for your spiritual journey who will stick with you through highs and lows, good times and bad, from here to eternity. To request your free copy of Building Spiritual Friendships, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and I'm talking today with Jessica Mesman Griffith and Jonathan Ryan about their blog entitled Sick Pilgrim and the writers' conference they're arranging called Trying to Say God, Reenchanting the Catholic Literary Imagination. Now, I have to touch on this because this is the Christophers, and our motto is it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. So I'm curious, you know, you're running Sick Pilgrim. You have a feature on Sick Pilgrim called Dark Devotional, and you know, even though you've talked about the darkness and everything, I feel like you're still trying to light that candle. So talk to me about how you're lighting that metaphorical candle through the work you're doing at Sick Pilgrim, maybe even Dark Devotional in particular.
Well, I did a post, I think, first Monday of Advent called Kick the Darkness. Mm-hmm. And it was based on a song by Bruce Colburn, who's a Canadian folk artist, and he has a line that says, kick the darkness until it bleeds light. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the elements that we try to bring out. We are kicking the darkness. It's not, we're not glorying in it, we're not reveling in it, but we're also recognizing that it's a reality in a lot of people's lives. And so, you know, I think instead of lamenting it, we're trying to kick it and see until it starts bleeding light. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So light comes out somewhere. And sometimes it's kicking our own darkness, mm-hmm. stuff that sometimes infects our own soul.
Yeah. Do you think part of the problem maybe is that some people don't even want to acknowledge the darkness? Because I think we everybody's got troubles in their lives. We are all, you know, dealing with issues. But sometimes we try to put on, especially in the Christian community, put on a happy face, like, you know, everything is okay. Yeah. How important is it, do you think, to acknowledge the darkness, not to let it win, but to at least acknowledge it's there?
I think that it's just fundamentally dishonest to mm-hmm. pretend that there is no darkness in our lives or in Christianity, that or Catholicism, we have a body on the cross, you know, and it's there every Sunday in Mass. So to have this sort of what Barbara Brown Taylor calls full solar Christianity, where we cannot face the darkness, is not a true Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is just shallow. And it doesn't speak to my life experience, which I've endured so much suffering already. And I need a faith that can handle and hold that suffering and mm-hmm. yet help me to see better in that darkness. And that's what I want to write about in these dark devotionals. I want people, as a devotional book writer, I've come up against this time and time again where people will say, well, it's just a little too, could you just end on a little more of a hopeful note? Could you find, and I'm like, you know, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can't find that ray of light. But I want people to be able to write through that too and to see that it's not just them. If they're not feeling the presence of God today, if they're not seeing the light in the darkness, that they're not alone. And then maybe we can help each other find that light. So the Dark Devotional is a little tongue-in-cheek, and it's a little bit me making fun of myself for being kind of the goth girl in high school, you know, who was smoking cigarettes behind the gym and wearing a lot of black eyeliner. But at the same time, it comes from a very genuine place for me that, you know, I want to press the scriptures for the meaning in the darkness and I want to challenge them and question them. And I think they can take it. And I think in the end, we will be led to truth through that honesty. And also I have to say, I was inspired by this really famous quote from Flannery O'Connor, where, once a reader sent her a letter, kind of criticizing her that when she came home at night, she wanted to read something that would lift up her heart. and that her heart had not been lifted up by anything Flannery O'Connor was writing. And O'Connor's answer to that was that if her heart had been in the right place, it would have been lifted up.
Okay.
So that's Flannery's typical way of dressing someone down. But I feel like it speaks to the truth of Scripture. And if you're denying that there's darkness in our faith and darkness in our life, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
Well, and I think there's a sense, too, of holy darkness, especially in the Bible. I mean, you know, the Holy of Holies, when the high priest would walk into the Holy of Holies to offer the sacrifice, it was dark. It was completely dark in there. And so I think Christians have sometimes accepted the dualistic view of light and dark and you know, meeting God in the dark. And, you know, at the crucifixion when, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? That is the darkest moment of history. And I think, you know, we're instead of realizing that truth can come in the darkness and the light can grow there, I think we've accepted this dualistic mindset of that somehow the darkness is as powerful as the light. It can certainly seem that way. It can certainly seem that way, and all of us can feel that. But in the end, it's not. And I think Christians are afraid of it. So, you know, I think Bono said it, you know, fear of the devil can lead to devil worship. Well, sometimes fear of the dark can lead to worship of the dark. If we're not too careful.
Well, and I also feel like, what do we have to offer people then when they are experiencing affliction and extreme suffering? When when your baby has died, when you're burying your child, when your marriage is ending in a complete disaster, when you're, you know, there are times when we just need to sit together in that darkness and let God move and not try to move too quickly out into the light or into some platitude or some, you know, God never closes the door without opening a window thing that is really can be deeply hurtful to someone who's experiencing spiritual abandonment and agony. So I want to create that space too, where, you know, if you're not ready to move out into the light, let me sit with you there in the darkness for a while. And maybe I can bring that light to you if you can't find it yourself.
Yeah. I remember interviewing the singer Matt Maher, and he was talking about Mother Teresa's experience of darkness. And he said he felt the church could do a whole vocation campaign on that because he thinks the church needs more priests who are willing to admit their own frailty, to admit that the darkness exists. So you would kind of go with that. You think that would be, In a way, strangely, a good recruiting tool for the church to get people to admit that?
Oh, no doubt about it. I think there's no doubt about that. I think, you know, the perception sometimes of the church on those outside of the church is that, we're not good enough to go to church, or everyone's happy and smiley all the time at church. And in some cases, that's the case. But I think if the church embraced that sort of mentality, you probably have people lining up for vocations that way, I think, because I think, you know, there's a sense of that you have to be perfect to be a priest or a sister, and I think
or that you have to be perfect to be a Catholic, or you have to
right,
be perfect
exactly.
to attend mass, or you have, you know, there isn't an awareness but from people outside of the church that we are the hospital for sinners. We're not behaving that way in many of our parishes. And I do sense a little bit of a sea change with Pope Francis. I do see more kindness and more humility in my parish. I see growth in that direction, and I want to be part of that growth, that of letting people know that we're all here to heal, and all of us are struggling in our own ways. So, yeah, that's definitely part of our mission, and I hope to see more of it in our church.
Okay. Well, in our final 2 minutes, tell me once again about where can people get more information about the Trying to Say God conference, and what are your hopes for the future of Sick Pilgrim?
Well, again, the Trying to Say God conference is on Notre Dame website. On our website, Sick Pilgrim. There's also a Trying to Say God Facebook event page as well. If you type in Trying to Say God on Facebook, you should be able to find it. As far as my hope for the future, we've got a bunch of different plans that we're working on. We have a podcast coming out called Wonder that'll come out January 9th. We're on the process of finishing the first episode now.
Those will be stories that we write and dramatize of instances in our lives and other people's lives where they have encountered wonder or mystery. There will be short episodes intended to encourage wonder and a feeling of sort of prayerful awe. So we're really excited about that, about moving into that podcasting world. And then we're also going to be hosting a nightly radio show on Breadbox Media starting sometime after Easter, I believe, of next year, mm-hmm. where we'll be having guests on every night and talking about what we're doing on the blog and maybe doing some readings of the Dark Devotionals, too.
So, bunch of different stuff. It's going to be called the Sick Pilgrim Traveling Medicine Show. That's our show. So.
Yes. You know, hopefully bringing a little healing through the radio, too.
Right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up, and I've been talking to Jessica Mesman-Griffith and Jonathan Ryan of the Sick Pilgrim blog on Pathos. You know, we've had a freewheeling conversation about light and darkness and the arts and Catholics and Protestants and everything in between. So, you know, they cover all these topics on their blog. Again, it's pathos.com/blog/sickpilgrim. And again, check out the Trying to Say God conference. It's, you know, they're reaching out to a lot of people who may not ordinarily be reached by the church, and they're doing it in their own unique way. They're lighting that candle by acknowledging the darkness, but refusing to let it win. So check out Sick Pilgrim. And Jonathan, Jessica, thanks so much for joining me today. It was great having you on.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
When it comes to what's going on in our personal relationships or the world around us, we often give in to the human tendencies to hear only what we want to hear, to make snap judgments, or to engage in wishful thinking. But God gave us the powers of intelligence, reason, and creativity so we can make up our minds after considering the whole truth. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Teach Yourself to Think More Clearly. It offers insights on thinking objectively before you act, taking a look at your own faults, learning from past mistakes, and more. To request your free copy of Teach Yourself to Think More Clearly, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.